Hey everyone, it's Ross here from the Towerhurst End podcast. Hope everyone's doing as well as they can on this kind of miserable week for Reading fans. Hey, so thanks for waiting for the Towerhurst End podcast this week. Excited to get it out to you. We've got some new recording software thanks to the lovely folks at ZCZ Films and all of our other patrons this week. So thank you to those guys. If you do hear any technical errors or anything like that, I do apologize. First time working with all of this stuff. So it will definitely get better in the future. But still, the show should be just as nonsensical as it usually is. So look forward to that next. Come on, you Royals.
Welcome to the Towerhurst End podcast 353, or rather, should I say episode 353. Very dark days, to be honest with you. It's not been a good week at all for the football club. We're used to bad weeks, but this one seems kind of extra significant, if you like. We kind of delayed the recording of this on purpose because we kind of knew that there was going to be issues moving forward. We had been ready to kind of bowl into talking about football on the pitch, which is what we are absolutely desperate to do and not focus on any of the off-field stuff. But we are where we are. And to join me, as per usual, is Mr. Ross Webber. How are you, mate?
Not too bad. Caught in the very vicious cycle that I think all of us are right now, right? The four-week cycle between wages, taxes and all that fun stuff.
Yeah, it's, I mean, you know, we regular listeners will know that we would always bowl straight into the recap. We can't do that today, really. There's bigger things at play here. And I think ultimately it makes sense to kind of start with where we are off the pitch. Before we do that, you know, massive thanks as always to ZCZ Films, who have supported us for a very long time and will hopefully continue to do that. Not trying to be hyperbolic, but we hope that we've still got a club in another 300 episodes to talk about, because, you know, obviously the news this week, unless you've, you know, completely avoided any newspaper articles, social media or anything like that, is not looking good at all. There are, I say, rumours, reports, however you want to term it, that staff won't be paid in full at the end of this week, which is when payday is due for Reading Football Club. Obviously, the tax bill is another issue, which we seem to lurch from in terms of month to month. As a result of that, we all know there's going to be a probable points deduction. And there's very little positives to take out of it at the moment, Ross. I mean, you know, you talked about kind of the cycle that you're in personally. Let's try and focus on the club to start with. How do you see it at the moment? And kind of where do you think this is currently heading at this stage?
It's really difficult to say, isn't it? Because, like, I think that something that you've been saying that's been really prescient in the last few weeks is about how the Sell Before We Die campaign and all that is really important. It's good for us to have a presence as a fan group, unified, that's putting out that message. But at the end of the day, what matters is when the current owner is going to actually relent and sell up. And that's kind of like having this come around again just a few weeks after another 3-point deduction is just really pushing that into the front of my head all the time at the moment. So it's kind of like, I love that we're all unified and everything right now, but it's demoralizing because it feels like, regardless of like the great things that we've been able to do as a fan base in the last month or so, what has been done behind the scenes? Has anything really happened behind the scenes? It appears that, you know, some staff may not be getting paid, and that's obviously a huge issue for everyone at the club. So it's really, really difficult at the moment to focus on the football like we want to do, because every few weeks we're in another malaise, like we talked about earlier in the season.
I mean, you know, I was thinking about the chronology of this in terms of where we've been and, you know, where the club's kind of lurched from disaster to disaster. And I distinctly remember being sat at Bearwood you know, training ground complex, whatever you want to call it, in January 2022 with a meeting with Dai Yong Pang. And I said to him at the end of the meeting, you know, I was part star at that point, and I just said, look, what guarantees have you got that there is going to be a football club for, you know, for my son, for my kids, for his kids? And he couldn't give me a guarantee. You know, there was nothing that he could say that at that point reassured me. And we are now, what, year and a half down the line? And it, you know, it's pointless now to start digging out people. We've gotten past that. We know what the issues are. But I'm just, as like many of you listening, I'm just sick of this shit. I really am. It's just exhausting. And everyone on social media has kind of given their own take on how they supported Reading. And it's really sad. It's really, really sad because, you know, there are people there that kind of fell into Reading accidentally. There are people that grew up watching a football club. There are people that just kind of started on the off chance that they might enjoy it, and they did. And you're looking at people like, it's a generational club. You know, there was someone who put up a really, I can't remember who it was, so apologies if it's you and you're listening, but someone talked about the different sections of fans. And, you know, you got like the younger fans that we talked about before in terms of kind of knowing what we would deem as relative success in football, you know, Premier League years, sort of pushing, you know, further back. It all, you know, we were like a couple of goals away from being in Europe, you know. And then, you know, someone else was like, well, there's obviously the fans that saw us in the old Division 4. And it's kind of a really good melting pot. And of course you get that at any club. But Reading's slightly unique in the fact that that journey that the club has had on the pitch, in my years of supporting them, 30 years, has been crazy. You know, started in this league now, say Division 2, when it was when I started watching them, all the way up to the top end of the Premier League. And then kind of that bit in between, they were like, well, you know, you're probably too good for the Championship, but not good enough for the Premier League. And it's just collapsed, you know, over time. I mean, are you, Ross, you know, genuinely concerned about the future of this club? Or, let me put it to you another way, are you encouraged by the Telegraph report that came out this week? And I'm sure other outlets have gotten it as well, but personally, I read the Telegraph one. About three, and the key word here is potential parties interested. Do you, you know, are you kind of at the point where it's like, oh my God, there's not going to be a club? Or are you kind of, actually, I'm encouraged by the fact there's people interested in this absolute mess, to be honest?
Yeah, I think with the assets that we have as a football club, both in terms of the playing staff, the you know, the football director positions, and then even just with like the property that we have for the stadium. I know obviously Dai Yong is very involved in that now, but you know, the training center, all of these things, you know, there's the skeleton of a decent club here, even if we are a bit hollowed out right now. And so I think that if there is a smart investor out there, then definitely there's something that they can make of Reading, right? Like, we've filled that stadium many times before when things were going well. So there's definitely a case whereby, you know, we've got our dedicated group that are always going to be going to games, you know, but there's definitely potential for that stadium to be filled every single week if the product on the field is good and if the fans are being communicated with properly to explain what's actually going on. And I think that that's part of the huge issue right now, is that nobody can trust any of the information because we just don't get that much information. So do I think that there's going to be another, you know, a club for 100 more years? I can't say for sure right now that that's going to be the case. But I find it hard to see us completely disappearing.
I think ultimately it's one of those where, you know, we can't be sure of anything. And I think if we were a normal club, in inverted commas, like, you know, if we were just going for a club sale, you probably wouldn't expect to hear anything at all. But because we're all, well, I say we're all, I'm desperate, and I'm sure you are as well, Ross, for some sort of positive news, anything at all, whether that's, you know, like, yeah, we're gonna do a full takeover, whether it's whatever it is. But, you know, the writing is on the wall now for his ownership in terms of where he's at. A lot of people, quite rightly, have kind of raised the question. I think James Earnshaw was like, you know, what question would you ask him? And everyone just put, what's the point? Like, what are you, you're not getting anything out of this. You know, the merchandising arm of the club in China is non-existent. So you're not getting anything there. You're not shifting shirts over there. You can't pay what you said you're going to pay as a bare minimum. So there's nothing there. The club isn't making money. People aren't attending games. You know, all these kind of things. And this will continue until there is basically nothing left. And so my frustration is, why does there not seem to be, and there might be, and this might be me on the outside as just a normal fan, you know, from a naive point of view, but why is there not this urgency from either people within the club, the EFL, to say, you've got to sell this football club now? Because, you know, I don't want to talk particularly about the EFL as such on this, because, you know, we're focusing on our club, but we all know that we're going to get hit with a points deduction. Without the pun, what's the point?
Reading fans know what's coming every single week because we've been doing this for 3 years. So obviously we're not going to talk too much about the EFL, but I don't want to advise how they should set up their rules or whatever, but you wonder if they can put an owner in place in the first place, why can't they remove them as well? Obviously, you know, we don't want to be completely in trouble with the finances, but you might have noticed that we're already completely in trouble with the finances, even with our supposed billionaire investor. So at this point, I'm just not that concerned about that. I think that there really needs to be some sort of mechanism to even temporarily give a club back to its fan base, back to its supporters groups, when there is a situation like this, and when the steward, because that's all they are, owners, you know, they're not people who completely own the club, they're just stewards of the club, who are there to take it to the next owner. But for all intents and purposes, that's all they're there to do, is make sure the club exists still when they sell it on to the next owner, and maybe have a nice time gallivanting around Europe in the meantime, or winning games in Stockport, whatever floats your boat as a football owner, really. But yeah, I just don't really see why he's hanging on. A few months ago, we talked about this, and I kind of said, yeah, I want him gone, but I'm concerned about where investment comes from in football these days, and I don't want to be stuck with some morally dubious funding. But it's certainly getting to the point now where I'm like, I want the funding to be based in the United Kingdom. That's all that matters at this stage. Or at least it can get to the United Kingdom without issues, because I think, as Ryan said on the podcast a few weeks ago, if the money can't get here, well, that's disqualifying. And so, yeah, I wish that there was some mechanic outside of the owner's decision making that could force this thing along.
Well, one guy that has ruled himself out the running of buying our football club is Simon Jordan. I don't know if you listen to TalkSport. I don't personally, but it did crop up today, and, you know, he basically said, "Nah, not interested." So I don't know if that is ego running away with him. Probably is, knowing Simon Jordan, but we know that he's definitely not going to be involved in that. I guess really the key thing is the next couple of weeks, because obviously, if a points deduction is going to happen, it will be in that time. We will know by, I would imagine, Friday, in terms of people being paid. And we'll know about the tax bill, of course, because obviously that's due at the end of this month, or has been due and won't be paid by that point as a cut-off. So, yeah, it kind of makes what goes on the pitch a little bit redundant in some respects. Without contradicting myself, we are going to try and talk about certainly the two games we've had at kind of first team level, and I would like to try and share some positives with the under 21s, because I thought they were excellent when I saw them on Friday night. So we'll head into the footballing recap, if you like, now.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Oz!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
Right, we'll start with Blackpool, because that's the negative, and then we'll go to Exeter, and then we'll loop round back to the under 21s. What went wrong, Ross? What was the issue at Blackpool?
Ooh, what went wrong at Blackpool? The game was played in the city of Blackpool.
It's never a good sign for a Reading fan being up there, is it, to be honest?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, that was I think that was the issue. No, it's getting very frustrating, the away form, isn't it? Obviously, it's been ages now since we've had any sort of like consistent away form. I'm getting sick of players coming over to say it's not good enough or whatever. I think, well, then do better on the field. I don't really think that... I think that Reading have needed a lot of, like, characters in the last few years, and so some who have been willing to talk to fans have popped up, like... Iadom and obviously Hutchinson this weekend was talking to the fans. The issue I have is that it's often the player, I don't know, it seems to be getting to the point where some of the players think that they can put in a 4 or 5 out of 10 performance and then just go and talk to the fans afterwards, and that's taking care of their performance as the weekend goes on. As you can tell, I'm digging into Hutchinson a bit here. Some might tell you that he was one of the ones showing fight and energy in the second half. I think he just sticks out like a sore thumb because he's clearly not going to be able to continue in this lineup for a long time. People can dig me out and find other tactical ideas here that might work, but I really, really think Hutchinson is the main issue in this formation right now.
I think ultimately, you know, really, we're kind of on a level now here on this podcast, but I think generally at TTE Towers that, you know, the formation isn't the issue, it's the players. And actually, yeah, you know, having Hutchinson involved in that, like, I think should be ashamed of himself personally, because, you know, the penalty that he gave away, all right, it was a situation where he was trying to recover a tackle or misplaced from Abbey. But he's never going to get there in a million years. And at that point, my opinion, and you know, people will go, well, he's experienced, done this, he's done that. I just think he plays for himself personally. I'm saying that as one of his biggest fans, right? You know, last pre-season, I thought he was amazing. I thought he was the second coming of, I don't know, Eric Cantona or something. Like, I honestly thought he was absolutely fantastic. And
the issue I have is that he's meant to be the mature one and, like, the experience on the team, and yet he's throwing himself into two-footed challenges nearly every single week. And, like, I knew that that wasn't something that you could do by age 19. So why does Sam Hutchinson at age 33 not understand? I understand that perhaps he's been told that he needs to be the physical side of the midfield, but I think that, to be honest, that's actually becoming a detriment to the development in that area of the other players on the team, right? So, like, Savage, for instance, is much smaller, much thinner, whatever, than Hutchinson is, and yet recorded more defensive actions in the last two games. I think that having a player there who's clearly just meant to do defensive stuff is making players think that they can shirk out of those responsibilities a little bit. And so I'd much rather see a partnership of, like, wing and Savage, whereby, yes, there's no one clear defensive, you know, stalwart in there or whatever as a center mid, but between them, the two of them will have to work it out together. Like, I'm not convinced that they can't do it, because Savage has already showed us he can do it better than Hutchinson can do in a game statistically. So, like, I think that we're reaching the end of the line with what he can give us as well.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think the fact that it was such a frustrating result off the back of Bolton, off the back of that ridiculous game against Exeter in the week, which, you know, we'll talk about in a minute, but, you know, it is frustrating. There's no getting away around it. Yep. I can completely understand people at the end, you know, kind of venting. Hutchinson coming over, I think it's just smoke and mirrors, personally. Like, people go, oh, he's brave. Don't give away a penalty then. Like, yeah, you know, actually,
exactly,
by example,
brave during the game.
And I'm not, you know, I'm not trying to dig him out, but, you know, the experienced players that some people clamour for are actually costing us games here. And now, as a fan, the position we're in, you know, we're in a relegation zone of League One. You know, obviously, we know we've been docked points, we'll be docked more points, but that's currently where we are. I would much rather invest my time, my efforts, my support in those younger players, right? I mean, under 21s on Friday, stick Rashisha next to Savage, you know, stick Michael Craig next to Savage. Just, easy. It doesn't matter. Like, honestly, it doesn't matter. Like, you know, you said about Lewis.
Both significantly better options. Yeah. No, you're bang on. You're bang on, Ben. And I think that you're bang on about some of the experienced players in the team being the issue as well. And what frustrates me as a fan is when I'm watching the new players do so well over the previous you know, over the previous few months. But now having it, with it being September 27th, you know, like getting towards the end of the month, it is time to find things to criticize. And for me, it is the experienced players. And it really frustrates me as a fan when we watch 4 out of 5 games where our new crop of youngsters are playing well, doing really good stuff, and then one game goes poorly. And really, let's think about this with Blackpool. What happened? 15 minutes went horribly poorly. And outside of that, it's sort of 70 minutes of, yeah, not great, but not as bad as our away performances have been. I do not see why there would be some people calling for complete changes of personnel and going back to some of the more experienced, in inverted commas, personnel after one game. I have real issue with the laziness in the punditry to see one game like that and decide that that's an issue, especially a few days after winning a game 9-0 with different players, you know, and different players who are less experienced, right? And you're bang on about Michael Craig and Rashisha as well. These are young players who have already shown us that they have energy. They've already shown us that they can do some of the physical side that Hutchinson is meant to be in there to do. Michael Craig made an incredible pass for, I think, the third goal maybe against Exeter in midweek. He looks like a real player. So I'm just, I think that the thing that's working for Sellers right now is trusting the youth. And I think that we just need to move on from some of the older experienced players. It's a brand new team this year. And the more we lean into that, the better.
Well, it, you know, make no mistake, as we said, it was a disappointing result, frustrating result, you know, incredibly annoying against Blackpool. I don't know, for me, like, if you've got a team that's just won 9-0 in the week, if I'd been the manager, and this is probably why I'm not a professional football manager, I would have just played them. I'd have gone, go on then.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because, like, they go and lose, you know, in that, up until you know, the kind of the kick-off against Blackpool, I don't think anyone would have particularly moaned if that team that started against Exeter and that squad against Exeter had been involved in that. Now, we're in danger of contradicting ourselves, because what we actually do is we lump Tom McIntyre into that experienced group. But actually, if you're part of a team that's just won 9-0 and the manager goes, "Nah, you're right," like, I'd just be like, "Hold on a second." Like, do you know what I mean? And, you know, obviously there are other players that would be better suited to the league, and of course that's the case. But realistically now, and this is kind of what I said, you know, in my kind of recap of the under-21s game, when they really outclassed a really good Leeds side, particularly in that first half. You know, they were like 3-0 up or something, 3-1 up at half-time, which was just outrageous, really. There is a core of players here that can flip between under-21 duty, cup teams, and first-team league games. And, you know, we are quite privileged in the fact that there is some really good players coming through. And the goal now for Ruben and his team is to start actually developing a system and a, not so much a system, but a core of players that he can go, right, do you know what? Yeah, we have got a lot of games coming up, but we'll supplement the cup team with maybe under-18s. You know, there is so much confidence in those young players. And externally, I know for a fact there's such a massive buzz around this group. You know, there was upwards of 15 scouts there on Saturday watching our young players. Now, all right, you could say, well, they didn't put in a performance, they didn't compete, whatever. I would disagree with that statement, certainly for the first 15, 20 minutes or before we conceded the goal. And this is the problem, is that, you know, if you've got a younger side, you kind of expect those results. If you've got a young side splattered with that experience, you don't expect those results. You don't expect those kind of capitulations within the time frame that we're talking about in terms of those conceding goals. So he's really now, and I've kind of said this through the column and other articles I've done, Ruben's really got to get his first team in his head sorted and say, okay, you can play, I can rely on you, we can move forward with this particular squad. It's the chopping and changing, although we're in the same system, and I don't think the system is a problem, as I've just said. You know, he's got to balance that now. And all eyes are on Burton, not just on the pitch, obviously off the pitch, which we'll come back to later on. But, you know, in terms of where we go from here, Ross, what would you like to see happen in terms of personnel, in terms of formation, if you think that's the issue? Like, what do you want to see? A little bit of a preview here against Burton on Saturday.
I think that just trusting the youth as much as possible is the way to go. I'd like to see Sam Hutchinson replaced with Michael Craig. I think that would be the first one. I think Burton, you know, are going to be a little bit easier to handle than Blackpool were. So I don't have an issue with putting in, again, a younger or less experienced player. I think I'd like to see Carson come back for Moeller on the left side. As much as I feel bad about criticizing Moeller after less than three full games, we have the competition. We might as well use it. Carson looked really good against Exeter again. So that was encouraging. And then I think elsewhere, I was very surprised Vickers came out of the lineup after the 9-0. Vickers was, I know Ballard got more goals than Vickers on during that game, but Vickers was just absolutely unplayable during that entire thing. The amount of assists and things that he pops up with during that was just really impressive. So I think just return to like the earlier season strike force as well of Kelvin and Vickers. Obviously Ballard is a popular one for sellers because he's brought him through from Southampton. He's given him the number 9 jersey, but I don't think Vickers has done anything to come out of the team. So all the way through, really, I just want to see youth. I want to see trusting, you know, these new players to understand this new system and really step into the roles that Ruben needs them to.
Well, I mean, moving on to the mailbags, we got, you know, a few little comments about experience versus inexperience, and as you said, some kind of differing opinions in the Reading Football Club media world, shall we say. So we'll dive into the mailbag now.
Keep up to date with all things Reading FC. Follow the Tilehurst End on Facebook and Twitter.
This podcast is proudly sponsored by ZCZ Films. Remember, if you want to get involved in sponsoring the show, drop us an email to thetilehurstend@gmail.com.
Right, Peter Martyr straight away says, we have so much talent in this squad. Do you think the issue is purely down to inexperienced players or the formation, or is it a combination of these or other factors that are contributing to our inconsistency? We sort of covered that a little bit. Well, quite a lot, actually. I would argue that not knowing whether or not you're going to get paid at the end of the month would probably contribute to inconsistencies, because, or whether or not, you know, the points that you're battling for on a pitch would actually be able to keep, you know, it's become like a bit of a dark comedy joke now, because, okay, well, no one really cares if we win, lose or draw, because actually we're not going to keep the points anyway. So
yeah, it's difficult to stay motivated when every the start of every month you have to basically tell yourself you're -3. And then, you know, continue to build points from there.
And, you know, this narrative about, well, you know, the football players, it doesn't matter. It definitely does matter, because there's a lot of them that are probably still living with their parents. There's probably a lot of them that, which is nothing, there's nothing wrong with that, by the way, for anyone starts digging me out, you know, all this millennial stuff about buying houses. I'm not saying that. But, you know, they've still got stuff to pay, right? They want to get on the property ladder. Some of these young players have probably got quite big mortgages. They want to pay that. You know, it doesn't matter what you do. The insecurity of not being paid is going to be massive, absolutely massive. So I would argue quite heavily that that is a big part of where this inconsistency is coming from. Benjamin Vickers, he's gone. Who did the ratings on Saturday? He's gone for him. Was that you? Did you do
it? Oh, yeah, it's okay. I didn't do it. No. Okay, I was in youth soccer world on Saturday morning. Fine. So, all right, well, you're not.
I don't know. Was it Harry? I don't know.
I'm not sure. If it's not me, guys, what's even the point in reading?
Who cares? Don't put it on my book. Anyway, Benjamin Vickers.
I'm kidding. Of course, read whoever writes the ratings. Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry,
guys. Maybe we should stop tagging people who write it. Maybe that would stop some of the abuse. I don't know.
If I write it, you can slag me off as much as you like.
Yeah, Ross would just bat it away with a strong bat.
I don't care.
He does not care. Right, Benjamin Vickers says, disagree with TT match report. Boo, can't disagree with that, mate.
Oh, okay.
Saying that Hutchinson was worst player on the pitch. It's debatable.
Oh, gosh.
Agree he clattered into Blackpool, literally the whole team. I love the idea of him just going around chopping all the Blackpool players just like for no reason.
Yeah. Or maybe just through the handshake line at the start, he can just go a shoulder through all of them.
Yeah, exactly. Or like, you know, their kind of tower thing, him just like chopping that down.
Perfect.
Like a rubbish Godzilla. Yeah.
Yeah.
agree he clattered into Blackpool for the pen, but showed most fight from any player and got us the deflected goal, which is true. Even spoke to angry fans afterwards. Overall, whole midfield was poor, though. Moving away from Hutchinson, do you think the midfield was to blame for a lot of it?
I really think, I mean, like, it's difficult to move away from Hutchinson there. Like, I know that we just said, like, we shouldn't be, like, I just don't, fight is not a football statistic for me, right? That's kind of like moving into the intangibles. Oh, he gives us so many intangibles, like courage and no fear and stuff like, what does that mean? How does that create chances or assists or anything, really? Like, I get that he's got, I don't know, it just kind of reminds me of, like, Tom Ince from last year, where he just, like, oh, he's constantly yelling at his teammates. I was like, is that fight? Like, I don't really understand. I really do get that as football fans, we want to see our players, you know, fight for the badge and all that kind
of
stuff.
It's hyperbolic, though, isn't it? It's not tangible. You know.
But it's not for me tangible in terms of, like, results. And I think that, you know, Hutchinson sort of huffs and puffs up and down the pitch every week. That's great. Mm-hmm. But there's been lots of studies on how, like, running more doesn't necessarily make you a better team. You know, the athleticism is one part of football, and a large part of what football is now is how quickly can you build up, how quickly can you get the ball forward, and Hutchinson is a stick in the mud for all of those things. The first week I saw him, I thought it was pretty good that he was, like, taking the ball and calming it down, passing it back to Button, all of these kinds of things. But then I thought, a few weeks in, why can't Savage do that? There's no reason that Sellers can't trust some of these younger guys to do the same thing. And if you haven't seen, if you didn't get to see the 9-0, you didn't get to see Michael Craig play the other day, go and check that out and tell me that we still need Sam Hutchinson in this team. I just don't see it. I think all the pieces are there and we just need to move them into place.
And he was very good, as I said, against Leeds in the under-21s game on Friday. He was very, very good.
Yeah.
As was Sam Paul, obviously different area of the pitch. But, like, you know, as I said, there's some talent. And there's no reason why Sellers haven't trusted those other players to come in and stake them. You know, Abbey, Iha Bitterman, Vickers, you know, just chuck them in. So
for me, at the moment, this is no longer... I mean, it is, obviously. But to a degree, this is no longer Reading Football Club. This is Ruben Sellers's football club at the moment, and I want to see players who are playing for him. I want to see players who are playing for us, obviously, but, like, if we're going to get results, it's going to be through playing in his style, and having players who have entirely bought into him. And I just think, obviously, he seems to be quite buddy-buddy with Hutchinson, so maybe that's why he's stayed in the team, but I just think it's time to move on to all of these new players who are buying into Sellers's philosophy.
Final note on Hutchinson, he does wear the purple kit incredibly well. And
that I will say, yeah.
He's worked really hard on his hair, so...
Yeah, that's true. He seems like a lovely lad. Like, if I met him in a pub, I'm sure I'd tell him that he's excellent and I love his fight and all that, those kind
you
of things.
You love his guts. But, I love your guts, mate.
You know.
Yeah.
Maybe
all
not.
All that sort of stuff, exactly. Right, Loyal Royal kind of kicked off a bit of a mini civil war, if you like, on the comments. We should all avoid knee-jerk reactions. Blackpool had a good day. The focus should remain at picking up points at the SEL, and there will still be some good away days. And then Nick Knight shot straight back, literally straight back. Two away points from 48 available. Expressing disappointment and frustration is hardly knee-jerk. We must have the most patient, tolerant fan base in the country. Setting us up so open away from home with our lack of experience is so naive, it should be criticised. And then Laura all said, I get it, but I'm just looking... I feel like I'm reading someone's personal messages here. I'm just looking at this season. The 2 points from 48 are put purely down to our owner, not the current manager and squad. So it's quite a hybrid of stuff there. Do you think the reaction's been knee-jerk? Let's focus on that. What is your kind of view of the response to Saturday? Let's talk about football mainly.
I think that at the moment... any time we lose a game away from home, it just continues to contribute to that narrative. And so, like, until we win a game away from home, it's going to come up every single week, right? Like, it's just going to be something that we're going to have to talk about. I feel like the phrase away form is something that that I've said 10 times on the podcast already in however many episodes we've done. So it's frustrating, and I don't think that, especially for the fans who are going, they have every right to complain. they haven't had the results. I think that obviously last season there was a very different thing from this season, and like I just said a minute ago, it's not Reading right now, it's Ruben Sellers' 11, and that's kind of what we're watching. And yeah, the away form hasn't been great yet this season either. Obviously we've lost to Exeter, Port Vale, Cambridge, and now Blackpool. We've also won a couple of away games in the Cup by a combined total of 13-0. So some of those away fans have seen some good stuff recently. But yeah, I can understand.
You're right. Until we start winning games, or at least win a game in the league away, this will continue to happen. You know, last week, so against Bolton, it was great because everyone was happy, and that's all we want. You know, it was a good example of displeasure, or you know, anger at what Dye's been doing or not been doing. But the performance on the pitch really was the build and end all, and actually, like, we deserved to win that game. You know, we really, really did. Yeah. So, you know, the more we continue to lose away, the more the anger will rise, and it's not. I might be speaking out of turn. I don't think it's actually aimed at sort of players per se. It's more to do with the fact this has been going on for years and years and years, really. So, yeah, there is that. slightly lighter question from TTE alumni, podcast alumni, an all-round good egg, Mark Mayo. Typical Mark, classic Mark, this. He says, if you could pick a fictional TV film character to take over the club, who would it be? I reckon Willy Wonka would... You see where this is going. I reckon Willy Wonka would build a good squad on the cheap, spruce up the stadium, catering, and introduce some fun new fan chants.
Concourses would be good then, wouldn't they? That'd be a good one. We're talking about fictional characters to run the club. Does Dai Yong Pang count? Is that a...
on topic and political. Love that.
Thank you. You've been in a room with him before, though, I understand. So I guess he does exist.
I've met him a couple of times,
Good to know. Ooh, who would I want to be? I think Frodo gets results at the end of the day. You know, like the goal of the adventure is completed. So, I mean, if that casting the ring into Mount Doom is the equivalent of Reading winning the Champions League, I think. So let's go with that.
Frodo?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I suppose mine's a little bit of a cheat code because I'd want the Brad Pitt version of Billy Bean in Moneyball, based on a true story, to run a club.
Yeah,
and it's still the greatest film ever made. If I could watch that film every day, I would.
I do know what you mean. I often find myself in a you can basically watch the entire movie in 5-minute YouTube clips.
Yeah.
And I often find myself in a rabbit hole of that, and then 40 minutes in, it is a fantastic movie. Ben is right.
Sidestepping, there was a thing on Twitter X that was talking about your favorite Brad Pitt film, and everyone's like, "Oh, it's Seven." It's not Seven. It's not Seven. It's Moneyball.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I can't think of any others for me. I mean, if you want some good action schlock, you could watch him in Troy, obviously. That was pretty funny back in the day.
I suppose the other one I was thinking of was Godzilla, because he just burned it to the ground and start again. He is very aggressive, but a lot of people like him.
Exactly, and he wants to protect the world. I think he's not normally he's destroying something normally, but he always goes back down underwater in the end.
He always sinks, but he always does what he needs to do, and it doesn't hog the limelight.
Yeah, like Frodo, exactly.
Yeah, it's like Frodo. Yeah, right. This is done to us. Great question, Mark. Typical you. Love it. Classic. Friend of the show who made his debut a couple of weeks ago, that's still available as a back issue if you want to listen to the pod. Ryan Jeffries, this was directed at you actually, Ross. What are his feelings, you, on BBC Radio Berkshire wanting to reinstate Tom Holmes over his beloved Tyler Bindon? And to add to that, because it's a similar sort of question, this was an anonymous question sent in, why do BBC Berks have an agenda against the young lads? Shoot.
Yeah, the BBC Berks stuff has been tricky so far this season, hasn't it? Mm-hmm. I think that they are also obviously frustrated with the team situation, as we all are. I think some of the concerns have been that they're coming out in the wrong way, and towards the wrong people. Obviously, there's a need to have frustration towards the ownership group and the non-existent fictional CEO and things like that at the moment. But I think that they're missing the memo a little bit on respecting that this is a new team, that getting rid of the old guard with Redding is kind of what's needed at this point. And just supporting and really looking at the facts and not what is comfort to them, I guess, I suppose. Like, we talked about this a little bit earlier, but the idea of bringing Holmes, a player who has barely played since being dragged out of the team a few months ago, and who conceded around 150 goals in the championship in his last three seasons, and that's going to solve the defensive issues, as if he's not one of the people who was part of the away performances that saw us concede three goals in 10 minutes quite consistently and things like that. I don't really understand how that would help, you know? And so I think that we deserve more as a fan base in terms of just like thinking through your analysis for a few minutes before saying something, which is, you know, amusing when I'm sitting here spouting off nonsense, obviously. But I just think that, you know, I'm obviously someone who likes new media with, like, football and statistics and things like that. And I'm not saying that everyone needs to, like, have their head in that kind of stuff all the time. But I think that there's a little bit of a tendency to just think about things in an afternoon by afternoon perspective there right now, and it's just not helpful when the club's in the state that it is. We need to be thinking about things in the longer term, both in terms of the rebuild of the squad, but in terms of the, you know, the issues with the ownership group and things like that. So I think that just trying to keep people together as much as possible and not throw in needless ideas like let's bring back Tom Holmes is the best way to do that personally.
It's my honest thing, my take on this is I don't listen to BBC Barks anymore. I was very, very disappointed with the way that they went about last year in terms of the lack of, in my opinion, challenge on Paul Ince and kind of allowing him to say some of the absolutely appalling things that he said about, in my opinion, the fan base and the way that he viewed the club being run and how we were playing and stuff, and there was no pushback on that. I've stopped listening to BBC Barks. I don't engage in that. I think when you have a collection of people like we do as fans that are disagreeing with their punditry, that's quite telling as well. I know everyone's kind of heightened and angry and stuff, but actually there's a lot of stuff that they are being reported as saying that is, in my opinion, just doesn't make sense. Like, I don't know why you wouldn't get behind these young players. I don't know why you wouldn't put your support behind them. I don't know why you would. And again, I haven't heard this firsthand. This is just stuff that I've picked up from people saying why you would kind of dig out those players. And I think ultimately, you know, it's a little bit like a relationship thing where no doubt those guys work incredibly hard. You know, you can use the term club legends for some of them if that's what you want to do. But actually, a little bit like Reading Football Club, like, it's probably gone on a bit too long. And kind of BBC Parks as an organisation probably need to go, is there other people we can bring in there to either freshen it up on a semi-regular basis, or
I think that's like a other really institutions good point.
Clean house, you know, because everyone's got their shelf life, right? Everyone has a point where even Sky Sports will rotate their pundits, and that's.
I think that's a really good point, because like if it was like talk, it feels like the content has gone from informative to chasing engagement, and if that would be fine if it was talk sport or something like that, because that's what it's there to do. But like BBC Barks is meant to be informative. It's meant to like take in more rounded opinions and things like that. And just really like, I'm expecting from the BBC, I'm expecting their pundits to think through what they're saying a bit more. Like we already talked about, not to be reactionary, to be analytical. That's the important thing for me. And right now, I just don't feel that it's fully being met.
I think on that individual, you know, I like Tom Holmes. I've met him on a number of
times. Tom Holmes is catching a lot of strays here, which I like him too.
But there's absolutely no way that anyone who has watched this team consistently this season, post Port Vale, would say that he should be in the team. Yes, he had a good game against Leeds at the under 21, scored a very good goal, I have to say. If you haven't seen it, I put a very, I think, very descriptive description of that goal on my Twitter feed. But there is no way he should be playing in the first team. Not at all. And it, the same could be said for Nestor Guinness-Walker. You know, I'm not picking on these players individually, but when you have a group of pundits saying, well, I think this player should come back in, there's absolutely no justification for it whatsoever.
Right.
Statistically, stylistically, nothing. Not at all. So it some of the takes that have been reported, that they've said that have been reported, I just think are absolutely wild. And to not, you know, as this anonymous question said, kind of support those younger players, it at best it's disappointing, really. So yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see how that one plays out moving forward. And you know, when we do eventually win the League One title, which I'm still pretty confident we will, you know, I'd like to see sort of fairly hefty slices of humble pie dished out to some of those guys, really. But yeah, we move anyway, Ross. We move. And talking of move, we are going to head straight into the preview, where we hope that football is the winner. That old cliche, but based on the, you know, the communication that's been given out this week, I don't think that that's going to be the case. So we're gonna head into the preview right now.
There's another huge game ahead for the Royals, so be loud and be proud for the big match preview.
Right, Burton Albion, relegation six-pointer at the end of September. Didn't think I'd be saying this at this point, really, but here we are.
We'd be 3 points above them, I suppose.
Well, we've been given the information from Sal before we die. You know, we're looking at tennis balls again. We're looking at wearing black, which is very, very handy for me because I have a stunning kind of Reading, a black Reading goalkeeper top that someone sold me on Twitter, which I can't wait to wear, to be honest. But I'm diminishing what the reason is there. And, you know, I'm just kind of having a little joke, really. But you know, ultimately the message is to kind of wear black and colours that depict, you know, the death of football club, really. And you know, we talked about this at the top of the show. It's going to be a big thing on Saturday in terms of how people feel. It's got worse since Bolton in terms of the outlook and the kind of information we've been given. Let's talk about off the pitch first and try and end on a kind of a semi-positive with what goes on the pitch. What, you know, from your point of view, Ross, what are you hoping Saturday brings for the football club?
Another display of sort of like, I thought it was like the tennis ball thing. It's kind of going to be a weird way to describe it, but I thought it was sort of like a mature escalation in that it didn't cause damage to anyone on the field or the field, really. Like, I'm sure that the groundsmen weren't that bothered about tennis balls hitting the field. So I think another sensible escalation is kind of what I'm hoping for. To be honest, it's annoying to have to think about what's going to happen during the game. And, you know, when I'm writing ratings, are we going to get past the 20th minute? Like, if there's too many tennis balls thrown on the field or anything like that. But no, I think that they've shown that they're coming up with ideas now that are disruptive but not aggressive. And I'd like to see another escalation there, I think. Unfortunately, we just have to keep making our point right now. If there is, as we talked about, no way that the EFL can just remove an owner, then we have to keep saying, we don't want you here, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, you know, they've also announced there will be a march if we're still in this position, you know, the next home game, which realistically will be Portsmouth, because I would imagine that Oxford will be pulled on the 14th due to international call-ups. You know, we've already had Tyler Bindon, who has chosen New Zealand. Apologies.
Don't remind me of that. Don't remind me of that.
I saw that one. But, you know, realistically, we won't have Oxford, I don't think. And, you know, a march, I think, is the next stage. It's just about, you know, being as coordinated as possible, about, you know, people feeling passionate about it, I guess, really. And obviously these guys have, you know, they have been criticised as a group, rightly or wrongly, but they've really kind of stepped it up. And for me, the Bolton game was great because there was, without exception, you know, people take the mick out of people in the Dolan, but, you know, everyone was up, you know, people lobbing tennis balls and stuff. So the feeling is there, the demonstration is now starting to move forward, and you know, we can only hope that that has the attention that it needs as it did last time. And you know, we hope that we're in a near future where we can just theorise about who's going to play rather than what's going to happen off the pitch, really. But you know, we are where we are. In terms of team selection, then, you know, we've had a clean week, really. We've not been involved in any cup competition this midweek. Would you expect changes to the team against Burton, Ross?
Just kind of what I talked about earlier. I think I want everybody over the age of 25 removed from the team.
ageist, you can't say that.
I'm being very ageist with my Ruben Sellers 11. Not Reading, as we talked about at the moment. But yeah, I think I want to see Vickers come back in for Ballard. I want to see Mbenge go in for Yiadom. I probably want to see Carson for Moeller at this stage. And I want to see either Michael Craig. Pick, really. I want Michael Craig, Lewis Wing, Ben Elliott. Anyone that's not called Sam Hutchinson at centre mid alongside Charlie Savage. I promise you, as soon as we take Hutchinson out, one of the other centre mids will work out that they can do that physical side too just as well. So yeah, that's kind of what I want to see, I guess. My very ageist 11.
I think the key for me really is who starts up front, because you can make an argument really for all three of those at the moment. Obviously Sam Smith is a way away, as we know. But, you know, Ballard, Vickers, Ehe Bitterman, you know, all three of those players really would go out in a second, you know. But realistically, in the setup, is going to be two from three. So who that is going to be, for me, is going to be quite interesting. As you say, I think the centre midfield is it's going to be open for debate. You know, as I said, we've had a full week, so there will probably be, you know, quite a few discussions going on and different formations in those training games. That element of it, you know, how we respond from a heavy loss, you know, quite a humiliating loss in some respects, will be very, very interesting. I know that the under 21s play away to Southampton on Friday night at the Snows Stadium. Literally never heard of it, but
stadium. Oh, okay, not St Mary's then.
That's no, actually, it's called the Snow Stadium. I don't know if that is St Mary's. I no idea, but they're playing there, and so whoever is involved in that, you would think that they won't be involved in the game, or certainly, you know, starting the game on Saturday, maybe kind of back up or sub potentially. But yeah, that will be quite telling, I think, in terms of how they manage that as a club. So yeah, look, it's going to be another interesting weekend in RG2. We've had another horrendous week. I think all eyes are on Friday in terms of what's paid and what isn't paid, and then obviously the subsequent potential points deduction as a result of that. It's going to be another fun couple of days in advert.
Yeah, another tricky week. Hopefully, even if we do get a points deduction, you know, we're back at, we're breaking even by the end of the week, I suppose, with a win against Burton.
Yeah. One thing I was going to say before we go, there is a charity game at Farnborough this weekend on Sunday. Team made up of MC Harvey. People might remember as MC Harvey, but he just goes by Harvey now. He's picked a team. There is also, they're playing a team of Reading legends. So please have a look at the kind of social media, look on his site, but also have a look on Farnborough's website to just have a look at the details on there. Tickets are still available. So yeah, that should be a good one. I think it's in aid of a food bank as well. So great
nice.
Cause.
You know, Ledger Woods at that one, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, a little bit of fun, I think, really, in terms of, you know, the doom and gloom that we've had. It's quite nice to see some of those players from yesteryear kind of feature and pull on the hoops again, really. So that's, you know, that's another option for this weekend. But fingers crossed when we're back, we can talk about another 3 points for Reading. Fingers crossed if we do get those 3 points, we can keep them and we can keep plugging away at this nightmare season, basically. There's nowhere else to describe it. That's where we are. We are literally in a nightmare. Look after yourselves. Thank you so much, Ross, for joining me.
Have a good
rest of your week, and we will catch up next week, I guess.
All right, yeah, sounds like a plan. Looking forward to it, hopefully.
Take care, guys. All the best, and come on, Reading.